Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio on April 14th, 2022. Thanks so much for being here today. And maybe you're listening on the archives, and a lot of people do that. That's okay. We archive everything over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org, and that is our home website for our American Consortium for Equity in Education, where our magazine, our online journal, Equity and Access lives, where all our work on social-emotional learning at SEL Today, you can link over there. Okay, we have a whole new thing on teacher retention and administrator retention, the educator shortage, which is frightening, and we hope all of you stay right where you are as professional and great educators. Check out what we offer over there. Our podcasts are over there, the magazine, and all kinds of great information over at ace-ed.org, and a lot of people go over there. Okay, for some reason I have three lines open and two people coming on the show. This is interesting. We'll figure out what's going on in just a second. We got a good show for you today. Okay, I've got Judy Pack and Kevin Bruni. Let me get them both on here. Okay, and they're from Centerpoint. And we're going to talk about a couple of things, but mathematics anxiety, how to teach through the test, how to handle mathematics anxiety for kids, and also culturally responsive mathematics education. And it's all from Centerpoint Education, and you can just Google Centerpoint Education, okay, and you'll get all the information that you need over there. And without further ado, good morning, Judy. Are you there?
I am here. Good morning.
Good morning. Call me Larry, please, and welcome to the show today. How you do? Are you in L.A. today?
I am here in sunny California, bright and early.
Well, I just want to tell you, I'm in Maine. It's 9 o'clock in the morning here. It's 6 a.m. where you are, so I appreciate you getting up so early. I just want you to know that. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Well, I know people get up earlier to match East Coast, but I do appreciate it. Kevin, are you there?
I'm here as well, Larry.
Hi, Kev. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Mom.
That's good. Where are you located today?
I'm in Mesa, Arizona, so it's 6 a.m. Here as well.
I was just going to say, thank you both for getting up so early. I do appreciate it, okay? And I'll give you, it's 45 or something degrees here in Maine where I am, so you have warm weather, so at least you got that to look forward to all day long. Okay, but thanks to both of you for doing this. I want to take this show in a number of directions, if I may. And again, everybody, check out Centerpoint Education. We're going about testing anxiety and teaching through the test, but we're going to test, but we're going to focus on math, okay? And Kevin Bruni over at Centerpoint is a senior advisor, and you focus on building quality mathematics resources for Centerpoint, including the professional learning and assessments, and Judy's an instructional designer over there in ELA. So do you want to focus on math here? Because I got some stuff. What do you want to do here? Judy, how do you want to work this?
Yeah, let's talk about it. We're going to focus on testing anxiety and teaching through the test, and we'll talk a lot about summative assessments. So instead of focusing solely on math, we're going to really tackle that big question of, you know, how do we prepare for summative assessments, the different types of assessments that students take throughout the year. So that's the angle that we're going to be sharing a lot of information about.
Cool, no problem. And I do want to say there's an equity inclusion factor. We're going to get into ELA and all the tests in just a second with the math. I just want to ask Kevin this. Kevin, you got a whole big thing. I don't know if you wrote it or not, and you can just Google this, promoting inclusion in mathematics assessment. Okay. And it has to do a lot with cultural responsiveness in mathematics. Are you an expert on that, Kev?
I don't know if I'd say I'm an expert on it.
I'll call you an expert.
I know a lot more than
I'm like the Wizard of Oz. If I say you're an expert, you're an expert. I'll give you a certificate. Okay, I'm the guy behind the curtain. Congratulations, ladies and gentlemen, the world-renowned expert on cultural responsiveness in mathematics, Kevin Bruni. Okay? And, Kev, this is key stuff, and I do want to talk about this. But let me ask you, and you're more the math expert, and we're talking about anxiety and testing, and I have to ask you a question. Were you a math teacher? What were you, first of all? Are you a math guy?
Yeah, so my background in education, before I was even in education, I was in engineering and manufacturing in that world and switched over. So I've got sort of some background, you know, in the real world, people might say. And then my math career was spent mostly in the classroom teaching mathematics to students, you know, for the most part, sixth grade up through high school through calculus courses. So, yeah, I've seen a lot of math students and a lot of students with, you know, anxiety about math, we might say, or testing
yep.
in general. So, yep.
Okay, so you're now a math, you're now an expert. Okay, Judy, you're an expert in, I'm like the Wizard of Oz again, you're an expert in ELA, right? English
I'm
language
the,
arts?
I'm the complete expert.
You're the expert. Congratulations. Okay, click those heels together, you'll be able to go home again. Okay? But,
oh, yeah.
Okay, now, I'm going to ask you a funny question, Judy, as I get into this. Okay?
All right, go for it.
I was a history teacher. You were an English language arts person. Were you really good at math?
You know what? I was actually really good at math growing up. So reading was something that I didn't really enjoy as a little kid. But as an adult, I started getting more interested in it. And I ended up being like a learning specialist and like teaching kids how to read and write. It's really funny
yep.
how that happened, yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is. So, Kev, I have a question for you. Kevin, knowing mathematics and knowing testing, why do so many kids, and this is a generic challenge, why do so many kids, including yours truly here, the Ultimate Wizard of Oz, always have trouble in math? And because everybody, that colloquial everybody, has trouble in math, okay? And we know that. That's intrinsic. We all know that. Okay, that some people are going to be very good and the rest probably are not. Okay, are we teaching math improperly? Knowing what we know, what are our expectations wrong? Kevin, the newly found expert, newly minted, congratulations.
Yeah. So I think, you know, Larry, anybody can be good at math. My guess is, my personal experience growing up and what your experience growing up was probably had a lot to do with, you know, how we think about math, how we think about math instruction, how we teach students, the curriculums we use, very procedural, very memorized. I'll tell you a little story. When I was in school, you know, I was in advanced math classes doing well, you know, good at one of those good at math kids, right?
Yes.
Got out, got a job, worked in this engineering company, and I was still in high school. I was just working in the summers. And I went in there, and I was surprised, shocked at, wait, this doesn't look anything like the math that we do in the classroom.
Well,
right? All these engineers look things up in their books, right? They look up formulas. They know how to apply it. They know how to use it. But all the things that we were doing and learning of just memorizing formulas, grinding things out, I'm going, where is all that? Like, what happened there, right? So there's this disconnect in what math is and how we use it and how we teach it in the classroom, right? That's sort of been the historical problem. You know, I think the newer standards and a lot of the movements in math are helping that. But they're clear there's a long way to go.
Yeah, we just got to help kids get through math and understand that some kids are going to be really great at it, i.e. Kevin. Okay, and some are not going to be real great at it, i.e. Judy and me. So two-thirds are not going to be real good at it, okay? And we just got to have those expectations in there. And on that note, you're an instructional designer. Kevin is a math dude, okay? We're asking kids to get ready, and we're asking teachers to teach so we can assess with state summative assessments. Let me ask Judy, I'm going to ask you the purpose of state summative assessments and how they differ from other tests students take through the year, and how do we teach teachers to have kids get through that well, and how do we make kids feel comfortable with that? And Judy, go for it. Tell us about this. Okay, this is really tough stuff, and it's nuts in math. Okay, go ahead, go.
All right, go. All right. So that's like a bunch of questions in one. So I'm going to ask Kevin.
By the way, I'm having trouble hearing you a little bit, Judy. Excuse me, speak up.
Yeah.
Or maybe just try to speak up a little louder if you can or whatever.
Sure. Is this better?
That's better. Thank you.
All right. I'm putting my face right by the phone.
Thank you.
So there's a bunch of questions all in there. So we're going to break it apart. And I'm going to ask Kevin to start us off with the purpose of the state summative assessments and how they're different from other tests that students sit through throughout the year. So, Kevin, can you take it off first?
Ladies and gentlemen,
yeah, so
our resident expert in mathematics, Kevin Bruni.
Yeah, so that question about purpose.
Go, Kev.
Yeah. Thanks. I appreciate it. You really stoked my ego here early in the morning.
And it's going to get better for the rest of the day. Just go for it. Okay?
That's right. It's
going to
be a good day.
Go
yeah. So that question about purpose, right? I think that's sort of the first thing we want to maybe address there that you asked. You know, we think about tests that kids sit through throughout the year, and we're thinking usually about the classroom tests they take, right? The tests you and I are probably familiar with growing up on Fridays every day, right? Every week. And so there's kind of these different types of tests kids take, what we might call, we talk about them as, you know, formative, diagnostic, interim tests, those kinds of things. Those are the types of tests that you're taking throughout the year in your classroom. Sometimes those are the end of chapter tests. Sometimes those are the quiz that you take. Sometimes those are just the question that gets asked, you know, in the last 5 minutes of class for kids to think about what we might call an exit ticket, right? All these different types of assessment that happen.
Yeah.
And those purposes, you know, generally are for teachers to get information about where students are, to find out how they might adjust their teaching in the moment or the next day or starting the next unit, right, based on where kids are right now and what they've mastered of a particular content in mathematics or in ELA or in history. In any of those courses, this happens, right, all the time. And so kids are familiar with those kinds of assessments. Most of us are familiar with those assessments because we took them growing up, right? At this season of the year, especially, and we're considering this idea of summative assessments. And, you know, those happen, too, throughout the year. It's kind of at the end. It's the summation of
right.
The learning that you've done. But we're talking about these large-scale state summative assessments, right? And the first difference, really, for those tests is they look different, right? This isn't something your teacher made, right? This isn't something that came out of your textbook. This is something that's happening a lot of times all over the whole state on the same day or within the same window. Every kid in your school is taking it at the same time, right? Your whole schedule is different that day, right? So it's just this different kind of test. It looks different to kids and teachers and to caregivers. But the reason it is because its purpose is different, right, as you sort of alluded to. So when you think about the purpose of these tests, they're a little different, right? So it's really to see, you know, one, have these students master the skills that are called for in that whole grade level and in those grade level standards, right? So it's not just going to be about one topic you just learned in chapter 7, right? It's going to be things you've talked about and been dealing with all year long, right? The second purpose that's a little different is it determines not effectiveness or what a student has learned per se about a single standard, like a regular test in your classroom might be, but it's really to determine sort of the effectiveness of maybe the curriculum or of instruction as a whole, how things are going in the school and the district, right? So it has sort of this higher level, you know, strategic piece to it, right? Because everybody's taking it. Everyone's taking the same test. So we call them standardized tests sometimes, right, because of that.
Yep,
So that's sort of a different purpose as well, right? And the third purpose that's different that leads to, you know, that can lead to some anxiety for people is they get used in a lot of states' accountability systems, right? States have accountability systems to check up, you know, on how schools are doing, how well instruction is going there. And you know, every state has their own system they build, but these summative tests a lot of times are, sometimes they're a large piece of it, sometimes they're less a piece of it, you know, it depends state by state. You know, but that's part of the purpose as well. They get used for these accountability systems to check up on the school as a whole, we might say, or the district as a whole. And so, you know, when we think about the purpose, you know, yes, what an individual student learned and mastered is a piece of that, right? But also they get used in these larger purposes as well, sort of evaluate the entire program to give accountability so that people from the outside can look and see, yeah, this school is doing its job, right? That's something that, you know, taxpayers want to know if they're funding schools, right? And so those three purposes are very different than a regular, you know, a through test, a test we might take throughout the year, one of those formative or those diagnostic assessments.
So, Mike, a good question then be, and I never noticed this among my colleagues when I was teaching, how come the teachers aren't more anxious about it than the kids? It's really measuring them.
It is, right? It is.
That's a stupid question, but it's true. The kids are going through all this anxiety, okay, and they're trying to measure the school and the effectiveness of the teachers. But it falls on the kids.
I don't know where to go from there, but
I just noticed that. And, you know, when I taught for years, believe me, I had good friends in the math department, okay, and any other department, I might add. All right, but it's really interesting, Kevin. Before I go back to Judy, I just got to say, okay, what you said never made a lot of sense to me. Those tests look different, and because they look different, they're scarier. It's not some mimeographed or show my age there or Xeroxed, okay, test the teacher took made up. Okay, it looks different. It's scarier. Okay. If you really look at the Frankenstein monster, he's not that scary. But if you compare him to regular people, he is that scary. Okay? You know? And that's a great point that you made up. Judy, you got me going here, okay? Let's go back to Judy. Judy, okay, you want to talk about ELA or you want to go on to question number two here?
So the question two is, what are some of the best ways to prepare students? To be successful in these summative assessments, right? There are two things I want to talk about. The first one is we want to make sure we're using high quality curriculum and assignments and assessments that are aligned to both standards and the curriculum throughout, and we're using this with fidelity throughout the whole school year, right? So it's not this scary Frankenstein thing at the end of the year, right?
You can use that line, by the way. It's not a bad line, I got to tell you. Okay, it's true.
Yeah.
So
the first piece is making sure we're doing that, okay? Throughout the year, we're making sure assessments are aligned to the standards. We're using high-quality curriculum. And so we're focusing on skills for the standards all throughout the year. The second piece that I want, the second way to prepare the students is to make sure we're having students, if like technology is something that's applicable for these tests, then let's make sure that the students are familiar with technology and tools and use that throughout the year, right? Let's remove the barriers, all the technical parts. And
good
also,
point.
Let's make sure students... Oh, sorry. What? So another, you know, along with making sure we're getting students familiar with this scary piece is let's make sure students are familiar with, like, the types of problems that they might encounter in these state exams. We can refer to release items, the state resources, to just make sure students are familiar. Like, we're making sure and this all ties in together with making sure assessments are aligned to the standards and we're using that high-quality curriculum. So if we're doing that, we're it's not such a scary thing at the very end of the year. That's my hope.
Well, you're right. You're right. And, you know, I'm going to say something. School districts, you call Centerpoint Education, okay? And what you want to do, okay, they go in and they'll help your school make all this happen, okay? Mm-hmm. It's that simple. They're great at creating. That's what you guys do. You're great at creating assessments. But you're obviously also great at making people understand the purpose of the assessment, okay?
Yeah.
And then how to make sure that we teach to the assessment so the kids understand it, okay, when it actually happens. Why does this look different, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And all through the year. I mean, it's just really important little stuff. And I have to ask this question. I'll ask Judy this. Judy, when you guys go in, are you telling teachers all this stuff you're saying right now? Because I don't know if a lot of teachers really get down into the nitty-gritty of how important these little things are, like i.e. the look of the test. Do they understand that? Mm-hmm. Judy, teachers.
You know, we do have these lovely products at Centerpoint that are curriculum aligned interim assessments and standards aligned interim assessments and all these diagnostics and screeners that we really, you know, make sure that we're, you know, making sure that these assessments are aligned to the standards. And we have all these resources that we have at our lovely company.
Yeah, you can do a good job. You have a great company. I love your company. I do.
Yeah.
Good folks. Yeah,
we want to make sure teachers are aware, yeah. That way we can help alleviate any stress that, you know, teachers are feeling with this summative assessment.
Yeah, you know, I'm old. I'm old, okay? And when I was in teachers' college, they never touched on any of this stuff. And believe me, most of us made the same tests that were the kind of tests we took when we were in high school. They never really taught us how to create a test. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They never really taught us the difference. I'm sure things have changed, okay, in the education,
yeah,
schools, et cetera. But it has to go deep, okay, because kids are under a lot of stress these days, all right? And teachers,
yeah,
have to understand that the testing that they give, the assessments that they give, has to make sense all through the school year, okay? It can't,
mm-hmm,
just be, oh, I'm going to test you on a sheet of paper, and then, by the way, you're going to take this computer form, okay, for your big Regents test or whatever they call it, wherever you might be, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
that ain't fair. That's not fair, okay? It's just,
mm-hmm,
not fair. So, Judy, I'm letting you be the point person on this. You can, and feel free to swing all the really tough questions back to Kevin, okay, if you want.
I'm going right. to answer them, too.
Well, I'm going to ask you question three. My friend Sarah gave me these questions. How can educators help reduce student and caregiver anxiety, I love that, surrounding assessment? And are you saying that there is caregiver anxiety? Judy, that's yours. Pass it. If it's too tough, pass it to Kevin.
You know what? I think that there's stress everywhere, right? So we will definitely address, yeah, teachers are stressed, students are stressed, families are stressed. And, you know, just to answer and add another thing to the earlier questions about the teachers is, you know, we want to make sure we provide professional learning, right? Make sure teachers,
yep,
are,
oh, yeah,
familiar with data and assessment literacy, and just, you know, they just need to know that, you know, these things are out there and that we're here to support them along the way to make sure they're feeling supported. So I know there's a lot of pressure with schools, you know, having to perform well on these tests, and we want to make sure teachers are not just like testing to the test and making the best use of time, right? They're not just passing on the stress to their students. So we want to make sure that, you know, keep emphasizing to teachers that, you know, we want to make sure all throughout the year they are using assessments that are aligned to the standards and using high-quality curriculum. And about students, we want to make sure, how do we reduce that student anxiety? So a way to do that is making sure we're practicing throughout the year, right? Letting students,
yeah,
feel successful,
yeah,
right? Feel successful throughout the year. And if we are, you know, I keep emphasizing that, you know, if we're using the curriculum aligned assessments throughout the year, this will reduce student anxiety surrounding assessments. We're practicing with topics and passages that they've seen before, giving them positive feedback, and just building their student confidence and showing, like, what they know, what they can do, and just also, like, providing that reflection piece as well with opportunity for them to assess their own learning, whether we're using rubrics, standards, language in there too. As long as we're getting that exposure, practice, and a less threatening environment, think that, you know, this will reduce anxiety, right? Because anxiety is always surrounded with the fear of, like, the unknown. So let's make sure this is something comfortable. We have exposure, a
good
lot
point.
Of exposure throughout the year. Yeah.
Good point. You know, it's all about, so I hate to say it, it's all about the SEL is a big thing these days.
Yeah.
Social emotional learning and in testing that matters. Okay. And
absolutely.
And testing that really matters. And I have a question. Kevin, let me throw this one to you. Kevin, okay, when you go into a school, do you go into schools, Kev? You.
We do, yeah. We go
you,
into schools.
Not
yeah.
we, you. Do you go in? I want to ask
oh,
you
yeah.
personally.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when you go into a school these days, okay, do you find that teachers have been well-trained in how to, A, give a test, what to put on the test, and how to make sure their students succeed? Are they well trained, or do they really need strong professional development continually? And we put a lot of stress on teachers, okay, to do a lot of things. I'm just curious, as you walk into most schools, okay, where do the teachers stand with all this? What's your sense of it?
Yeah, so I think it varies widely from place to place, right? So that's the first thing. It varies really widely where you go, and some places are going to be farther ahead than others. I would say that, you know, some of them are farther along on that journey. Some of them need a lot of help still. And again, not their fault, right? It just depends on where
exactly.
They've
I'm not. Yeah, that's not my
point. Done. Yeah. We find that, you know, there's been a lot of good games that have been made in that area, right? A lot of good games that have been made in that area. There's a lot of work still to do. We find that whenever we go into places that teachers are very engaged, they value these conversations, they want to know more.
Absolutely.
Their teachers generally are eager to learn and help, right? Like that's what they're about. They're about learning for themselves as well as their students. And so, you know, we do find that sometimes there's lacking in those things about data literacy. What do I do with this information now that I've given this test, right? And so that's really what we try to do is help support them to do that, to get those things they need. And so, you know, how far along are we? I'd say again, right, that, you know, compared to where we were 10 years ago, we're a lot further along. I'd say there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. But every time we go in and talk to teachers, we see that they're, you know, they're there, right? They're in the trenches and they're ready to help and learn and they're engaged and they value these kind of conversations we're having today.
And you know, I'll talk about math for a second again, okay? A lot of people do have challenges with math, and again, I include myself, so I'm not picking on anybody. We ask elementary school teachers, as an example, to be the foundational teachers. They are so darn important, all right? And we ask them to teach everything, all right? And I'm curious, do they know how to give that assessment in math so that the kids can move forward and we can really teach them what they need to know about it? And by the way, not every kid is going to go into a math-oriented field of expertise. All right? And I'm just curious, are elementary school teachers good at this? Okay? Do they need more help than the standard math teacher, okay, in a secondary school? Kev, what do you think?
Yes, that's a good question, right? I've sort of found, you know, like you said, that there are these, we ask them to be experts in everything, right? Like that's sort of the way that we've set up instruction in most classrooms across the country here. And so we ask them to be experts in everything. And so I think, you know, one of the things that's really important then is, like Judy had referenced before, you got to make sure that your curriculum, right, that the curriculum you're teaching is really, it's really well aligned to the standard. That are with that curriculum are really well aligned to that, because just to be honest, they don't have time to be, you know, the greatest expert in every single subject they teach, right? And so asking them to make their own test, right, asking them to make their own curriculum is sort of a ridiculous ask, right? And so it's really incumbent on schools and districts to say we've got to have highly rated, highly aligned, good quality curriculum, you know, in math, but also in ELA. I might be the math guy, you know, teaching in an elementary school and being asked to teach ELA or history or science, right? And so in all of those areas, it's important to have that good, high quality, vetted curriculum that we know is aligned to the standards, that teachers can teach with fidelity so that they are experts, right, through the use of the tools that we're giving them. And we, you know, we offer, you know, at CenterPoint, if I can plug us there, we offer assessment and implementation support workshops to help them do that, right, if they're not familiar with how to do that in their schools. You know, we're trying to help out there as well. And so I think that's sort of the key piece, though, right? If you have good, high-quality, aligned curriculum, then that's really going to help those teachers who have to be experts in everything at that younger level. And that's not to say the high school teachers don't have the same problem, right? Most high school teachers are teaching math however they learned it when they were in school, right?
So that's exactly right.
may or may not be that good either, right, depending on how good their instructor was. So,
Remember, they were
that's
good
right.
in math. Yeah, that's
and
not
what we usually
that
mean
far.
By that.
Yeah,
that's right. And what we usually mean by that when we say that the kid is good in math, what we usually historically have meant by that is this kid did really good at memorizing formulas and plugging in numbers into those formulas to get answers, right? But that's not really what mathematics is about, and that's not really what the standards for mathematics are about, right? They're not just about memorize formula, plug and chug, get answer, right? And so, if you know, using that scale, we may or may not say that they're good at math and really understanding conceptually what's going on, but now they're teaching kids that, right? And so it's equally as important there, right, to have good, high-quality curriculum aligned to the standards, having teachers know the standards and what they mean and what they're about.
You know, and it's interesting, and this is an ELA math thing that I'm going to bring up here. If we could get math and English teachers together, and if the English teachers could have the kids read mysteries where logic has to solve the crime, okay? And, of course, mathematics is logic, Okay, I didn't realize that until I was 57 years old. Okay, mathematics is logic. Okay, and if you can follow the steps of logic, all right, you can learn mathematics. Nobody bothered to teach me that when I was a kid. All right, and I do blame my teachers for that. Okay, they kept it separate. All right. And, you know, they just, if I didn't learn it, the hell with it, they just marked me on a curve, and that was the end of it, covering their own ass, I might add. Okay? And it's just ridiculous. You know, I got to tell you guys a story. My son used to live in New Orleans, and we used to go down there for Mardi Gras, and you'd see these high school bands that were absolutely incredible. These kids adore music. Okay? New Orleans kids. All right, any given kids. Yet you look at the math scores in New Orleans, they stunk. Okay? And yet music is mathematics. Okay, how come nobody was able to put that together? And I read your article, okay, at centerpointeducation.org on promoting inclusion in mathematics, culturally responsive lens in mathematics. I'm harping on math again. Okay? But it's all interdisciplinary. Okay? And the point is, if these kids love music, most kids love music, teach math through music. You got a winning combination. Teach math and logic through English language arts mystery novels. You've got a winning combination. Okay? Judy, you may proceed and yell at me if you wish.
No, I agree.
Judy?
Sorry. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, let's merge their interests together, right? But I do want to talk more about data from assessments, right?
Do it.
And all right.
Do it.
We know quality data fuels instruction and practices and protects kids from being labeled or feeling bad at math, all right? Let me see. Kevin, should we talk about how we use data from assessments?
Well, so, you know, it's interesting, right? I think that data that we get back from assessments, right, can help inform our instruction and our learning. And so, Larry, you know, you talk about this idea of, you know, students were good at this and not good at that piece, right?
Yeah.
And so what that may be showing is that, you know, your curriculum or that your instruction, that it's missing something, right? So maybe in your case, you know, you are missing that focus on conceptual understanding of what was going on in the math, right? That's the logic piece behind it. That was missing from your instruction, you know, and you figured that out when you were 57, right?
Yeah,
or you go down to New Orleans,
late.
Right?
Too late to do well
too
on
late,
my
right?
Too late to get me into
too late
arms,
to well in
let's put it
yeah.
that way. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Not too late for your life, but too late to get into Harvard when you were 18, right?
Right.
But yeah, you see that later, or you look and you see, you know, in New Orleans, you're seeing these bands, these kids, and they clearly have an understanding of a piece of mathematics through music, right? Fractional understanding and order and how to add those things up to get, you know, the full measure in a bar. And so they understand those things conceptually, but you're finding them sort of out through just kind of observation or going, oh, hey, look at that, right? And so if we're good at using the assessments, including these state summative assessments, right? When that data comes back and we can break that down and look at that, and there's some districts that are very good at this, right? And some that need, you know, continue their growth. But that information that we're getting there, right? The information that we get from those assessments can help us find, you know, where those holes are in our instruction, where those holes might be in our curriculum, where those holes might be in, you know, our teachers' understanding of those pieces of the instruction that need to be happening, right? You know, as opposed to just observing it later, right, if we can use some good data literacy, some good assessment literacy to understand these assessments that kids are taking, then we can find and target those areas, you know, before it's too late, before they're 57 years old or before they're, you know, already gone and gone into something else because, you know, they had this impression that, well, I was bad at math, when really it was, no, you were bad at maybe a particular piece of math or of ELA or of science, whatever it might be, and we can find that through good data literacy and through using these assessments, right, then we can inform our instruction and our learning, right? And so that's really this pain point, right, that exists of, hey, we give these tests, we give them at the end of the year. I can't do anything with it because now those kids are gone, right? Those kids have moved to the next grade or whatever. And so it's a waste of time, right? And what really needs to be happening is we need to be taking that information we're getting and using it not to find out, you know, did did Larry know standard X about logic? But we need to be finding out, how are we doing teaching logic as a whole across our math curriculum, across all the students? Is it just Larry? Or, oh, it turns out it's all our students. Well, is that because all our students are bad at math? Or maybe we're not doing such a good job teaching it, right? Maybe our curriculum's not that good, or our teachers don't have enough knowledge about it, or whatever the case may be. It's not Larry's fault. Larry's not bad at math, right? It's we're not doing a good job instructing it. And so that's really what we want to be doing with this data, right? It's to stop that. Let's see, 57. So let's back that up 40 years, right, or 50 years, so we can find that when we can help that student.
You know, it's interesting. I had the same math teacher. I went to a public school in Philadelphia, and I had this in a big high school, and I had the same math teacher for all 3 years. And it was an academic class. You know, everybody was going to go to college, and he'd give the test at the end of the week. I've told this story a million times. Give the test at the end of the week. Everybody get a 40, okay? Everybody get a 40, all right? He'd mark on the curve, so everybody got an 80, okay, the grade we – I'm not making this up. The grade we got was a B, and he would move on to the next chapter.
Right.
Okay? You talk about not using data. He didn't get that we didn't understand chapter one before we moved on to chapter two. So how do you think we all did on chapter two? Okay?
Right.
And to the school, okay, hey, look at this. He's got all B students. What a terrific teacher. Okay. Yeah, when I think back on that, and, you know, as I said it before, he's covering his own tuchus there. He's covering his own backside, okay? And not doing it. He's, you know, if the kids aren't learning, you're not teaching, right? You have to use the data to understand that, okay? It drives me nuts. You can hear it in my voice. We got three more minutes left. I just want to get to the next thing. I'm going to ask, you know, best teachers, best use of instructional time after the administration of a state test, Judy.
Yeah, so I know it might be tempting to like watch, put on some like Encanto movie and like just a movie for the class period, right? It's like, okay, testing is done, and you know we're done, right? But that we shouldn't approach it that way. We need to continue that quality instruction, right, that we've been doing all year long, and just continue to teach in that manner instead of just, like, saying, we're done and we can just play around for the next couple months. So some ideas that we have are, instead of some, like downtime, we can use that, like you talked about, right, the data from the assessment throughout the year to figure out where are areas that students need support and areas we can remediate. We can also use that time to engage students in very student-led, rigorous, and engaging projects and activities during that time. A couple more things. We can think about instruction for next year, right? Starting to think about the instruction that they will get and, like, prepping a little bit for that. And we can also just go back to revisiting the major content that's critical. Again, tying with that, just making sure that we're thinking the major things that students need for the following year and starting on that. So there are many things that we can do to continue that quality instruction after testing.
And we got to do it. And on that note,
yes.
Everybody, it's CenterPoint Education, centerpointeducation.org. They know what they're doing. I love having you guys on the show. I really like what your company does. Are you going to go back to sleep now, Kevin? Is this the game, or what's going on? Are you up for the day?
Up for the day. I mean, I got kids now banging around, getting ready for school here, right?
Oh,
so I'm up and ready to rock and roll, you know.
There you go. You did a good job. So early morning. And Judy, you're even further west. Okay, what about you? How about you, on your fourth cup of coffee or what?
I'm going to go and get a cup of coffee right now.
Good girl. That's the spirit. All right. You two are wonderful. You just brought great insights to all this. I really appreciate it. It's so early in your day. Both of you, have a good day, and thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you,
You're
Larry.
You're welcome. You're really welcome. Thank you. Both of you, take care. Bye-bye.
All right.
But that's Kevin saying bye-bye, and Judy, who already said bye-bye, from centerpointeducation.org, centerpointeducation.org. And this is a really good company, and they really get the job done on assessments and curriculum and all that sort of stuff. So check it all out. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org. please check out what we do over there, all the things we do with Equity and Access and SEL, like stress from testing, and all this stuff we're doing now. We're really concerned about the educator shortage. Okay? Stay at your job. We love you there. All right. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening and have a good day.